Before we start, let me start by welcoming everybody again and invite everybody to observe a moment of silence for all those who departed during the start of the year due to COVID and other related illnesses. Some of them are members of this house, and some are loved ones, relatives, friends, and general members of society. Can we observe a moment of silence? May they rest in eternal peace. Amen. Thank you very much, honorable members, and welcome Honorable Horn, Honorable Yako, Honorable Swartz. Those are the members that I did not welcome. Before we start with the agenda, Honorable Glenys Breitenbach asked for a second to raise something. Honorable Glenys.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, on behalf of the Democratic Alliance, express our sincerest condolences to the ANC at the passing of the Honourable Mthembu. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I must say, honourable members, I do appreciate the spirit, especially from the opposition parties, because in all our times of pain with the passing of Honorable Hisham Mohammed and all other members of the ANC who have passed on, we have continuously received support from our brothers and sisters in the committee. This is what defines our humaneness as a country. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Mthembu. Honorable Swart.
Chair Swart. Thank you. May I also just join Honorable Breitenbach in expressing our deepest condolences on the passing of a dear friend of mine, Minister Jackson Mthembu. We pray for his family, we pray for all his colleagues in the ANC. He'll be dearly missed by all of us together at this time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart. Thank you very much, members. Can we start with the agenda? The agenda is before us. Today, we are going to have a short meeting. We will deal with the consideration of the draft report, in fact, the draft committee program, the discussion to fill the South African Human Rights Commission vacancies, and the briefing on the State Liability Amendment Bill. Can I just, by way of indication, can members indicate whether they have received the quarterly program that we have issued? It's a draft quarterly program, subject to adoption by this meeting.
I have received it, thank you.
Received, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Received, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Received, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Excuse me, Chair, I haven't received it.
We will arrange that the committee secretary ensures that you receive the committee program. Thank you for alerting us, Honorable Yako. Thank you very much, members. I would suggest that because we have this backlog that I do not know how are we going to deal with, but for this year, I think in our next meeting, we would start with the minutes in every meeting. But let's think about, I know I have an army of lawyers here. Let's think about how are we going to deal with the outstanding minutes. Maybe at some point we would have a solution as to how are we going to deal with that those outstanding minutes. But going forward, we need to start with the adoption of minutes so that we have a record of our decision as the committee. Honourable members, let's start with the program. Can I get the indication from members? What do you say about the program? I think we should bear in mind that this program was adjusted to take into consideration the program that was issued by the Office of the Deputy Speaker, which declared that these 2 weeks would be reserved for members' training. We have asked for only 2 days in the 2 weeks because as members would know that we have the bill that we have to finish as a matter of urgency, that is the Correctional Services Amendment Bill, because we have to also allow the NCOP's time and space to process the bill. So we have asked for the date of the 5th of February for us to have public hearings, and we think those will be the very short public hearings because we only have indication from one organization that wants to do oral presentation, that is Helen Suzman Foundation, and then we also have one written submission. So we think that we would be able to conclude that bill fairly quickly. But we have tried to ensure also that we prioritize the outstanding work of the 3GBV bills, so that at least by this quarter, by the direction of the programming committee, we were instructed that these 3GBV bills must be passed in this first quarter. So we are trying to meet that deadline. So can I get indication from the members about the program?
Yes, sir.
Honourable Self.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much indeed. I understand the need to process the legislation, and I do appreciate that there are very important things that we need to get through. But it does seem to me that, as always in this committee, the matter of correctional services and oversight of correctional services and reporting from the Department of Correctional Services not receiving the attention that it should be in this program. And you recollect that about this time last year, we did agree that we would have separate meetings on Fridays devoted to correctional services matters. I see that the Fridays are now taken up some with correctional services matters, but by and large with other matters. And I fear that if we allow this thing to continue, the matters relating to correctional services will not be properly considered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Self. In fact, when we're drafting the program, I raised those issues sharply. The view has been that let's just try to get the pressure that we have, that is of the four bills, the 3GBV bills plus the Correctional Services Bill, behind us. But we would have to think about creating more space for correctional services, even beyond the Fridays that we initially had in mind and agreed on, because from the presentations that we received last year,
it's quite clear that correctional services is in serious trouble. And we were of the view, subject to the direction of the meeting, we were of the view that once we have pushed these bills and we are done with them, we would, especially the Correctional Services Amendment Bill that has got a constitutional court deadline, we will try and create a lot of space for correctional services to try and balance the time that has been lost for correctional services, and to balance the time that we pay attention to justice at the expense of correctional services. It's something, I mean, if we have to be honest, firstly, from the budget point of view, correctional services has got a bigger budget than justice. It has a bigger challenges than justice. And we can't continue to pay lip service to the fact that we need to have more time for correctional services. But I was really appealing to the meeting that let's try and use this first quarter to prioritize all these GPV bills and the Correctional Services Amendment Bill. Then we will start giving a lot of attention to correctional services beyond just giving them Fridays. Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the arguments of Mr. Self with regards to correctional services, and I just wanted to add that if we spend an entire term, again, not paying proper attention to correctional services, it will be very hard to catch up. I really do think, I understand the difficulties, but I do think we should try and find more time for correctional services now, even if we have to sit in the evenings as a committee. But we need to find time to deal with correctional services becoming more and more problematic. And then I just have one request with regards to the program, Mr. Chair. I would very much like, and I suggest that the committee consider, if we can have a meeting with the minister as soon as is possible, and we have to put it into the program somewhere, to traverse the issue of the appointment of retired judges in capacities to deal with the backlog. We all know that it's been in the news lately, and I understand the financial implications. And of course it's problematic, but the backlog continues to grow, and the performance of the High Court continues to decline. And if the judge presidents are of the view that they need to make use of retired judges in order to deal with their roles, then it's difficult to understand how the minister can just say there's no money. I think we need a fuller understanding of this problem, and I would very much like us to have this discussion sooner rather than later. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. I'm leaving my video off because of the network issues. So I support the previous speakers with the emphasis on challenges facing correctional services, but at the same time, what Honorable Breitenbach has said about the state of the civil court roles in the High Court is a matter of great concern in certain provinces where particularly there are very few court dates being given. And I would support that we need to both have the minister explain to us what the situation is, and we have at some time, you have alluded to a meeting with the Chief Justice as well and heads of the judges president to understand what is going on during the lockdown levels with the allocation of dates for High Court trials, particularly relating to long civil matters. You know the impact that has on the economy where those dates are not being given. So, yes, the focus on correctional services oversight, but I support you in dealing with the first correctional services bills, then looking at the GBV, because we're going to have to account to the WIPRI, to the programming committee on dealing with the GBV, and then to what degree we can exercise oversight over correctional services and the department, given the fact that the correctional services is probably more urgent, but there are just as many challenges with the justice section. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Horn, and welcome, Honourable Mofokeng.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, well, in addition, really, to what other colleagues have already said, it's problematic that we, for example, will only be dealing with oversight over the performance of both correctional services and justice in respect of the second and third quarters towards the end of February and beginning of March. The reality is that both those departments, but specifically also the minister in respect of a number of issues identified by the committee and agreed to by him in respect of urgent interventions that was to take place in order to address the manner in which things at justice has been falling apart to an extent under his watch. I don't think it would be discharging our duties if we park those issues until the end of February and the beginning of March. I would, as a way of a constructive proposal, want to ask that we look into the few days prior to SONA even. I see on the draft program in that specific period there's no meeting scheduled for the portfolio committee, and I would want to request by way of a constructive proposal that we schedule those engagements at the beginning of February rather, in order for us to effectively deal with the commitments we received from those departments towards the end of last year. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mofokeng.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to Honourable Members. Chair, I do agree with the Honourable self and other members about the correctional services, and I would like to support the view of Honourable Breitenbach to say that maybe we should also consider meetings in the evening. That maybe would be able to help us, because if you look at the program as you said it, that the correctional services bill will take our time, noting that we also have the 3GB bills. So that I will request that maybe they have to go and work on the dates of covering the work in the evening. I don't know how, but it's very important that we do that. I really think that the honorable members are correct. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mofokeng. There is a member here with iPhone. I'm not sure because the name is not indicated, and I wouldn't want to say iPhone.
It might be me and Zodi.
Hello?
I'll try to change the...
Hello?
Yes, Honourable.
It's Honourable Ndozi, I think, Chair.
Oh, Honourable Ndlozi, your voice is very, very low. We can't hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now, Chair?
Yes, it's much better.
Yes, I'm saying that I'll try to change the name. I apologize for that. There's really no need to repeat. I'm covered by what honourable members have been saying, and I think that we should, as a matter of principle, never create the impression that the GBV bills are not important. As a matter of fact, I think that as this parliament, that will be our greatest legacy in relation to the amendments. This particular matter, it would seem to me, it reigns supreme in relation to priorities that we should focus on. I'm sure that's not what everyone else meant, but I thought it's important to underscore that we want to conclude thoroughly that process, because I think that that's really what we will be judged on, and we should take it as an important legacy we want to leave as this committee and as this parliament. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Ndlozi. Any other member? I don't see anyone. Honorable members, we would try and look at the evenings, because the direction or the directive from the Speaker's office is that these days before SONA are reserved for members' training on rules and many other issues. So if we have to apply to sit, it will have to be in the evenings to prioritize the issues raised by members, to prioritize correctional services. But there is a point that has been raised by Honorable Ndlozi. Once we start with the processing of the 3GBV bills immediately after the 5th, when we are done with the correctional services. And from the little experience that I have had is that they are quite involved. So we might have situations where we would need to meet both in the mornings and in the evenings, just processing the 3GBV bills. And the other challenge that we have is that we tried to get Dr. Lutz to give us a briefing next week on the issues that we raised as the committee, where we needed a legal opinion. We are told that she is not very well. So that is why we had to push that she maybe by the 16th of February, she might be okay to give us that briefing, because the issue that we referred to her, for her to give us a legal opinion on, covers all the 3GBV bills. So I'm just saying to members, we might have the situation where we meet for the 3GBV bills beyond just meeting in the morning, and they might even stretch towards the early evenings, and for us to be able to meet the deadlines as instructed by the WIPARI and the programming committee. But we have taken all what the members have raised, and we would try and revise the program accordingly. So can we agree that generally the members do not have an issue with how the program is structured, except that we need more meetings to deal with issues of the correctional services. And I know it has always been a practice that after the State of the Nation address, ministers would come and give us briefings as to their areas of focus for the year. So that is when the minister would be able to take us into confidence about some of the issues that will be his priorities for the year. So that meeting will be taken care of. And then there are also, I think I did circulate, in fact, the committee secretariat did circulate a response from the Chief Justice indicating that they agreed to meet with us. We have to choose between whether we meet them before the State of the Nation and or after the State of the Nation. The committee secretariat is engaging with the Office of the Chief Justice as to which date would be appropriate. And that would also make us to make some amendments to the program. So I think we agree with the program with all those caveats that have been indicated by the members, and the issue that there is a possibility of some changes being made to accommodate the meeting with the Chief Justice. Is that in order, members?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we go to the next item? A discussion on processes to fill the South African Human Rights Commission vacancies. Can I now invite Ms. Silverstone to brief us, to take us through?
Good morning, everyone. I'm just going to share my screen. Sorry. Banani? Oh, here it is, sorry.
Okay.
I found where I need to go.
Okay.
I had a very blank moment there. Okay. So I've just been asked to quickly run through the appointment process for the Human Rights Commission vacancies one will arise on the 5th of February and the other one has already occurred. So at the moment, we've been asked to make recommendations to fill two vacancies. The one occurred when Commissioner Jana passed away in October this year, and then the other one will occur in February this year when Commissioner Amemia's term of office expires. Just quickly going to slide 2. The commission consists of 8 commissioners, so no less than 6 must be full-time and no more than 2 commissioners must be appointed in a part-time capacity. So in this case, both of the appointments are to be full-time. And then just to quickly run through who we actually have on the commission. We have Professor Commissioner Majola, Commissioner Malachi, Commissioner Gaum, Commissioner McQuetla, Commissioner Stibagnoni, and Commissioner Nissen, and of course Commissioner Amemia. And just looking at their skills that are there, it's a strong legal or law background, and most of them have a law or legal background. Commissioner McQuetla has a social work, empowerment, public relations, and marketing background, and she deals mostly with children. And then notably, Commissioner Amemia also has a business background. And then Commissioner Nissen has theology, he's a community organizer, and then he was the MPL and MEC. That's just to give an idea of the kinds of skills that were there. Of course, Commissioner Janowitz had a very strong legal and activist background. Then in terms of our constitutional criteria, the constitution is the thing that a commissioner must be a South African citizen, they must be a certain fit and proper, and then in the case of they must comply with any other requirements prescribed by national legislation. And in that case, it's the South African Human Rights Commission Act. Okay, and then section 1932 of the Constitution provides that a commission established by chapter 9 of the Constitution must reflect broadly the race and gender composition of South Africa. And if you look at the commission, except for Commissioner McQuetla, all other commissioners are men. Then if you look at when the chairperson wrote his letter to the committee, he did highlight that gender and age are an issue. So he highlighted the gender thing, but he's also saying that age is an issue or a factor that we may wish to take into account when making our recommendations. Then in terms of the Act, Section 4.1 highlights the need for commissioners to be independent and impartial. And then in Section 5.1 of the Act, these are the statutory criteria, the minimum criteria. First, a commissioner appointed as a commissioner must be a South African citizen, must be a certain proper person, have a record of commitment to the promotion of respect for human rights and a culture of human rights, and be a person with applicable knowledge or experience with regard to matters connected with the objects of the commission. And the objects talk about the promotion, protection, and monitoring of the observance of human rights. People who may not be appointed are those who are in the service of the state or appointed by or are in the service of the state and receive remuneration for that service, an unrehabilitated insolvent declared to be of unsound mind, convicted of an offence, and sentenced to more than 12 months of imprisonment without the option of a fine, an office bearer or staff member of a political party, member of the National Assembly, a permanent delegate of the National Council of Provinces, a member of a provincial legislature, a member of a municipal council, or who is on a candidate list for any of those positions. In terms of the actual process, it's the one that we're familiar with. The committee makes a recommendation to the National Assembly, and the Assembly vote on that recommendation, and if it approves, it must be in terms of the majority vote, and the President appoints that recommended, the person or candidate who is recommended by the National Assembly. Notably, the commissioners are appointed for a period of 7 years and are eligible for reappointment. And that means that Commissioner Miemia is eligible for reappointment. And I see he has submitted his CV. In the case of a vacancy in the office of a full-time commissioner, the President may, on the recommendation of the National Assembly, appoint a part-time commissioner for the unexpired portion of that part-time commissioner's term of office. I just put that in because that was quite an interesting section of the Act that I found. In terms of the deputy chairperson, and this is actually something new in the Act. The President must appoint on the recommendation of the National Assembly the chairperson and the deputy chairperson of the Commission, which means that when we make our recommendations, we should include recommendation on the vacancy in regard to the deputy chairperson. Just notably, the deputy chairperson takes on a leadership role in the commission when the chairperson of the commission is not available. In a letter to the committee, the chairperson has highlighted that this commission carries both leadership and program responsibilities and administrative management responsibilities, particularly in chairperson's absence. And then just to run through the considerations in terms of our process, there are 57 nominations or applications for the position. And the committee, again, must decide on the number of candidates that it wishes to shortlist. And bearing in mind that it must also make a recommendation for the position of the deputy chairperson. In other words, that the position of the deputy chairperson carries additional responsibilities, and we may be looking for different attributes of a candidate to that of an ordinary commissioner. Then in terms of screening of the candidates, again, it's when will this take place? Will it take place before the shortlisting or just before we after the interviews? The structure and the length of the interviews, I think that's something that we probably would decide slightly closer to the time. And we have our interview questions and then any other considerations that might arise. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Silkstone. I'm not sure because you put this in a much more professional slides now. The one that I read yesterday, it was the one from the research unit. You put Mr. Sibanyoni as advocate Sibanyoni.
Oh, sorry.
and I know he is running a practice as an attorney.
Yes, no, that was a mistake. I'm very sorry about that.
And then there was also, I'm not sure whether you were able to correct it, that Advocate Armenia started on February 2020.
Yes, yes.
That was rectified.
I did expire it. I did rectify it. And I'll go back and double check anyway.
Okay. Okay. Just an issue of clarity before I give to to other members. The distinction between ordinary commissioner and the deputy chairperson, we did not make it clear to people when they applied whether they would like to be considered as deputy chairperson or as ordinary commissioner. How have you dealt with that in the past? I think that is just a clarity from my side. Members, I've noted the hand of Honorable Nivot Drachens, Honorable Noma Temba, Masego Jele, Honorable Josie, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Horn, Honorable Swart, Honorable Mfukeng, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Christine. Greetings to everyone. Christine, please, can you remove the presentation?
So that Sorry.
Okay, so my questions that I have relate to the age. What do you mean by age? And I don't know currently what the ages are of the commissioners. So exactly what do you mean with age? Is it between 35 to 40 or 40 to 50? Just explain that to me in more detail, please. And then the commissioners, the list that you have, maybe can you email, sorry, just a moment. Maybe, sorry, I can't see the interpreter just a moment. My apologies. Okay. Maybe you can email how many years everyone of the commissioners are on at the moment. Maybe you can email that list. That's my second question. Then I did not receive any CVs. So can the secretariat please submit the CV so long that we can just have a look at it at the moment? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Newport, Honorable Jelle.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jelle. Honorable Ndlozi.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's a quick one. Do we have the actual deadline to clarity? By when should this process be concluded, which will help us to sort of make a program in relation to this. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndlozi. Honorable Dennis Breitenbach.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I agree with the Honorable Niva Drachen. I would like to see the CVs. Also, 57 people is a lot to go through for the small amount of positions available. Is it possible that some procedure can be followed to perhaps eliminate people who don't necessarily qualify, or do they all qualify? If you could deal with a shortened list, which would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Glenis. Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is a procedural input, in part also based on your question. The way I understand the legislative framework as presented by Christine, I would want to suggest, and Christine obviously could also advise, that we as a committee in any event must also follow a process of inquiring from the current incumbents who of them would be interested in serving as A, the deputy chair, and B, who of those who are part-time now would want to advocate for the committee to decide to designate them to be full-time commissioners. In suggesting that, however, I have not studied the advert, and I want to also say that we should carefully consider whether we could possibly procedurally not run into trouble if we advertised that the vacancies will be specifically for full-time commissioners. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I would also plead with you, Honorable Horn, that even beyond this meeting, take some time to also try and give answers to these questions, because the procedural issues you are raising are quite involved. They might need all of us, in fact, to think about them thoroughly as to how are we going to process them. For instance, if we ask people who are not being interviewed whether they are going to be available to be appointed as the deputy chairperson, what process will we need to follow? So I think we are raising some things that I think we would need a serious procedural advice on if we have to take that particular route. Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. I've been largely covered. Just the one issue relating to the once we have a short list to advertise the list of those names for public comment, as we've done in the past, which has been very useful, and maybe that can also be added. We've done that previously with interviews as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mufuke.
Thank you, Chair. I've been covered largely. I think on the question of the CVs, for me, is very important so that we can see who's there, so that we are able to see whether we have the internal staff, because remember, South African Human Rights Commission has a number of staff members, and you find some of them have applied, and we need to check on that, because we need to always check the internal people that have experience in that field than bringing very new people. That is one. Number two is that on slide number 5 that has been raised by, I think it's Honorable Velma, about the age. I just want to say that maybe something is also missing when you say age and gender and age, then you don't talk about continuity, which is something that is very important that we look at when we discuss on this. But the last part will be on the issue of women. We must not lose the focus that there are only 2 women out of 8 commissioners. And as we do the work of the 2 now, we must not lose sight of getting a woman also there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Just, I think, in addition to what Christine raised before she answers, the commission itself is having serious capacity problems, which affect its effectiveness. Because even with the woman that is left, Commissioner Magwetla, she is seriously ill. I had a discussion with the chair late last year. She has been in hospital since September and is unlikely to come back soon. In fact, they were advised by the doctor that they will be able to do a proper assessment or to give a considered advice after February as to whether she would be in a position to proceed. And if she does proceed, she will need a lot of support. So we effectively have one woman who is left. She is also not well. If we are to give support to the commission, I think the issues that were raised by Honorable Horn, which I thought were difficult issues, are issues that come to the fore now. How do you give a holistic support to the commission beyond just the interviews? Because the filling of vacancies are going to give some form of support, but we should be thinking holistically, how do you give support to that commission? Thank you very much, Honorable Ms. Silkstone.
The first question was, how do we deal with the issue of the deputy chairperson, the appointment of deputy chairperson and chairperson in the past? Well, it only really applied in one set of interviews, which we did in 2016, and in that case, we just interviewed, and then from the selection, we chose one. But remembering in that process, we interviewed for almost all the positions in the commission, and including additional ones, because the Act also increased the number of commissioners. So we had quite a selection of people which we could choose from at that stage. In this case, we only interviewed two positions. And yes, I mean, technically we could also look at the other commissioners and see if we feel that the skills that are there would be appropriate, if we don't find somebody that we like or do for that position. Then in terms of the aid, the letter just refers to the word aid, but I would imagine, and I hope that I must assume something on the part of Commissioner Majola, is that we're referring to the fact that there aren't enough youthful people in the commission. Perhaps it's time to have some younger commissioners in the commission. Honourable Anita Drachen, I'm very happy to send all a list of the expiry dates of the commissioners. I think they're all around 2023, except for Commissioner Mimia, which is position is expiring now. Then in terms of CVs, I'm sure that Benani will circulate those as soon as possible. Then in terms of Honourable Indulgi's question around do we actually have any actual deadlines, there aren't any deadlines except that there is a vacancy. And in fact, there are two vacancies. Well, there's one vacancy and one that's happening now. And that will mean that the commission has less than 6 full-time commissioners. So then, you know, then we go into the statute. We're breaching the statute. And also, as the chairperson has just pointed out, the commission has serious capacity issues. It's not a good idea to leave vacancy for a long time. That means that the commission doesn't have the leadership that it needs. And I think at the moment, it's really important that those positions are filled quite soon. Then in terms of the matters that Honourable Horn raised, I think that those kind of questions would involve the people advice. Again, all of those sections are new. So every time we encounter the situation, we're having to tease our way as to what would happen, what is the correct way to deal with, or what is the correct way to interpret these sections in the Act, because we've never dealt with that before. And then yes, Honourable Swart, I think it's best if I ask Benani and Sia just to circulate the advertisement. Then in terms of the issue of continuity, at the moment, this is Honourable McKing's question, at the moment continuity isn't really an issue because most of the members of the commission, the the commissioners will be there for a number of years, but we will have a continuity in 2023 when, I hope I'm saying 2023, that's correct, I'll double check that, but we will have a continuity issue then, because then there will be a whole number of commissioners' term of office expires. Yeah, I hope I've answered all the questions. If there's anything I haven't answered, I'm happy to help me to answer them.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nivo Dachan.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Christine. Just one question. The one that I have relates to the deputy chairperson position itself. Previously, the late deputy chairperson was female, but now are we looking for a female again to keep the balance as the next deputy chair? Are we looking for a female deputy chairperson position again, or a person incumbent? Thank you. Just that question.
Can I ask that Christine does not respond to that question? That is the question we must grapple with as members. Secondly, in answering that question, we have to take into account the issues that were raised by Honorable Horn. How are we going to go about them? Because I think they are quite involved. If we talk about proposing a deputy chairperson amongst the current serving commissioners, what process we would have followed, because we have to make a recommendation to the National Assembly. So I do think that the issues that were raised, the procedural issues that were raised, they would need us a bit of guidance beyond this meeting. Maybe in our second meeting, we might have that guidance. Can we propose somebody that we have not interviewed as a deputy chairperson because he is or she is currently serving in the commission? How do you go about doing that? Because in other acts of parliament, it is usually easier that because parliament just makes recommendations of commissioners or board members, then it becomes the responsibility of the president to choose amongst the selected people or the recommended people as to who becomes the chair and the deputy chair respectively. But in this regard, it is the National Assembly that makes that recommendation. So we have to make a recommendation as to who becomes the deputy chair. If we were interviewing the whole commission, who becomes the chair and the deputy chair respectively? In this case, who becomes the deputy chair? And we must take into consideration the issue that Honorable Horn raised, that are we going to select the deputy chair amongst the new commissioners? What about the old commissioners? I don't think we have an answer now. Maybe Christine, you would, but I think it's something that we need to think about it so that we don't run into procedural irregularities. We have to consider it. The issues of gender, female, and all of those issues as to are issues that we are going to grapple with going forward. The service will have to be distributed to members. But I'm not sure whether do members want the original CVs or the summarized CVs, or will be able to go through the 57 original CVs, or do you want like the abridged version of the CVs?
Chair, can we get the summarized one, please?
Is that the view of all of us that we need the summarized versions of the CVs?
No.
No.
Yes, Chair. Yes, Chair.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Chairperson?
Honorable Ngozi?
I don't want the summary. Because it's selective summary. I want the full version.
I think that is easy.
I think that we have some obligation to go through what the people have submitted. As they are submitting to us as members of parliament, we have that obligation to arrive at a short list and ultimately at our decision, having considered everything that people have submitted to us. In any way, I would like the full version of the summary of the CVs. Everything, the letters, everything that each candidate has submitted for consideration.
Now, what we can do is to have the summarized CVs and the full CVs as annexes. And that would cater for everybody. Can we move to the, I think the issue of how many people do we select? I mean, we can't have 57. We have to bring it down to some process to be a manageable number for interviews. I'm not sure whether I would want to agree that out of the 57 for two positions, how many, but that just come at the point where we do the selection. Is that correct? Christine?
Yes, I would imagine that it would probably be something that we would consider when we do our selection. I mean, there may be 15 brilliant people we want to interview, or there may only be 8 people that we find that actually would fulfill, you know, the criteria. So at 15, we might need to do a bit more selection, but at 8, probably less so. So I think that we need to be a bit flexible around the numbers at this stage. I think the first step is to look at the CVs and see who people, the members would like to interview.
Okay. So the summary of the CVs and with CVs attached, the original CVs attached will be circulated to members for their consideration. Any issue, members, on this matter? Are we fine with the process as it is proceeding, bearing in mind that there are still those difficult questions that we still have to, I think Christine and the parliamentary legal advice can look at this issue and the procedural issue that were raised by Honorable Hall, Honorable Ngozi, and Honorable Yago.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm not sure your guidance. That's why I asked about the deadline, because ordinarily, at least the experience with regards to other institutions,
yes, your voice was too low, yes.
Okay, check. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
I'm saying that shouldn't we get a subcommittee that is going to lead the process, do the short list, determine on what basis they do that, conduct the interviews, come to the full committee with a recommendation, we adopt it, we send it to the House. Because if you think about having to go through the process as a whole committee, considering also that the agenda that we spoke about, the workload is too much. So I would propose, I'm not sure, because there are people who have been serving in this committee specifically, that could tell us what has been the practice before. But ordinarily, let's get a subcommittee to do that process in which you, Chairperson, are involved, and then we we get a report. So they will be doing this work on a different program that not everybody has to be in, but which also does not disrupt the bigger program of the committee. I'm not sure, but it seems to me from a workload perspective to be a better process. Yeah, thanks.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Ndlozi. Those were the challenges we are confronted with when we are trying to deal with the issue of the program, because we were thinking about the workload, we were thinking about the 3GPV bills, the complexities around that. We were thinking about the fact that when the term comes to an end in February, you don't need an unreasonable delay because it will reflect bad on Parliament that the term has come to an end, and there is, in fact, the Commission is limping and the Parliament has not fulfilled its obligation to fill the positions. So that is why we're pushing everything to be concluded this quarter. But I think your suggestion about the subcommittee is for members to discuss. It used to be easier some years back because the committee was much bigger. I think Honorable Swart would know that the current committee, the committee we have now is a full committee. In 1999 would be a subcommittee. So what the committee was some time back and what it is now, we have very few members, but members can discuss and let's apply ourselves to the suggestion made of a subcommittee to process this matter so that we can try and process things fairly fast and meet our constitutional obligations as Parliament. Honorable Yako.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, I would like to agree with what Dr. Ndlozi has just said. It would make the workload much, much easier for us as a committee to attend as quickly as possible and as efficiently as possible. My question was, when do we expect to have the CVs by? Because normally I'm almost left out of any documentation pertaining to the committee. So I just would like a benchmark of what day or how long should we expect to have those CVs so that if I should not receive them by then, I contact your office.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yako. Before I note other members, committee secretary and research unit, how long will it take you to do the summaries? Because I think the original CVs, it would be easy to deal with to distribute them. How long will it take you to do the summaries?
Good morning, Chair. Or maybe concession. Okay. We have already started summarizing the CVs, and hopefully by tomorrow or Thursday we should be done with it. So maybe we can say realistic, maybe by Thursday morning we must have the summaries.
Okay. Christian?
Yes, I was just going to say Thursday morning we're hoping to send out the summaries.
Okay. So can we say that by Thursday members would have the summary and the CVs by Thursday or before Thursday, but not later than Thursday, members should have the summaries and the CVs so that we can go through those CVs. Are you covered, Honorable Yako?
Yes, I am covered, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can we come back to the suggestion of the committee? What is the view of the members?
Chairperson.
Honorable Mfokeng.
There was a proposal by Honorable Ndlozi on a subcommittee.
Yes.
I sat there. And so that we can answer that question. That's what I wish that we can hear, whether members are agreeing or not.
Yes, that
is a question. How many people should be in that subcommittee, noting the challenges of our numbers?
Okay, you are cut a little bit. You're saying that the question from Dr. Ndlozi is?
I was saying that there is not answered yet on the issue of the subcommittee.
Yes.
Do we agree with it or not? And if we do agree, how many people should be in that subcommittee and the time frame for that too is very important.
Yes. In fact, Honorable Mfokeng, it's a question that I'm asking and nobody wants to answer it. Was the first is whether do we agree with the subcommittee, how many members, what form should it take, and all of those things. The reporting mechanisms to the broader committee and the time frames, as you are saying. But nobody seems to have the part, Honorable Steve Swartz.
Chair, I understand in the past we have had subcommittees, but when you consider our approach to the public protector, the whole committee deliberated on the shortlist. And I think the key part will be the shortlisting. So I don't have a principal objection to a subcommittee, but considering what you said about the small numbers in our Justice Committee, at the very least, the subcommittee would have to consist of representatives from all parties on the committee, plus alternate members that might want to join that. So it could be that it's almost the whole committee. But should this committee agree to use a subcommittee, then it can help with the time processing of the 56. The main purpose of that would be the processing of the shortlisting, of dealing with the 56, and then, as I indicated, every political party would have to be a part of that process. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Glenis Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have also no objection in principle to the proposal of the Honorable Ndlozi about a subcommittee. I just think that the subcommittee would end up being almost the entire committee, and it may therefore defeat the purpose. So I suggest that the Secretariat somehow find a mechanism to screen the applicants, screen out those who don't qualify for whatever reason, then tell us how many are left, and we set aside time as a committee to deal with those that are left. It's really, it shouldn't take forever to compile a shortlist to deal with the matter. It should take one committee sitting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mofuke.
Chairperson, I think now we are clear that we cannot have a subcommittee, which I agree, but then we'll need to have an extra day, even if it's in the evening, that we look at that, noting the people that we are looking at, that if Advocate Amel Mayor is the one who's going, what were the responsibilities of that person, and we look at the CVs, that do we have a capable person on that. The same as the deputy, we know that the deputy is the person who does the deputy work on behalf of the chairperson, and look at all their responsibilities, because I know even the former deputy had responsibilities, and look at whatever we are getting, do we have that kind of people, and our shortlisting can go in that way. That is my suggestion, and I think Honorable Breitenbach, you are correct that we don't have to go that way, but we have to get a day or evening that we look at it quickly. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other input? Honorable Tony? Or Honorable Mona?
No, Chair, no further inputs. I think it has all been covered. I hope my network is better now.
It's better, yes. I think you've moved away from the tree. Honorable Glenis, your hand is up.
sorry, it's an old hand.
Okay. Now, honorable members, I think if we look at the program, we have tried to pace it so that we can be able to have time to deal with the issue of both the selection, the shortlisting, and the interviews. And we have even allocated 2 days for the interviews. We were guided by how we have dealt with the issue of the Deputy Public Protector and how we have dealt with the issue of the Information Regulator. So we do think that if you look at the program, we would be able to finish the work quite reasonably soon within this quarter still. But which means that we would have to work, especially after the State of the Nation, we will have to relook at the program again to say which areas do we ensure that we prioritize, because the three top priorities for the term, it's the Correctional Services Amendment Bill. And the reason for that priority is because the Constitutional Court deadline ends in May, and we have to allow the NCOP space and time to do the processing of that particular bill. And the problem also is that the read-in provision for the Correctional Services Amendment Bill ends in May. In fact, it lapses in May, so there's going to be a gap in the law. So that is our first priority. The second priority is the 3GBV bills. We have been given a deadline of until the end of the term. The first term, we should have finished that by the end of this term. And then the third priority is the South African Human Rights Commission, which we have set ourselves a deadline that by the end of the term, we should have submitted the names to the House for consideration. So I would suggest, honorable members, that we would still be able to meet all the deadlines in our program, that we do it in bank as a committee. We do the shortlisting. Usually it does not take long. We have dealt with that. I think Honorable Jose was part of the shortlisting of the Deputy Public Protector. And I'm not sure whether Honorable Iago was part of the Information Regulator, but we do that quite quickly. And then we would move to the interviews, which would hold them over a period of 2 days. It shouldn't be much of a problem, especially if we are able to get this service by Thursday morning. We'll be able to get through those surveys and we consult with our political parties. So we think that it's a manageable workload. Can you pass on that, honorable members?
Agreed, sir.
So we would also ask for the legal opinion from Parliament on the issue that were raised by Honorable Horn, because I think they are quite important for us to get an opinion from the Parliamentary Legal Services, because I think it is for the first time that we are dealing with the situation of this nature. Thank you very much, honorable members. Can we go to the last item in the agenda, the State Liability Bill? This bill has a long history, starting from the 5th Parliament to this Parliament. And we have gone through the presentations that were circulated, even the PowerPoint presentation that was circulated on time by the department, we shouldn't be spending a lot of time on the bill, because from the presentation of the department and from the public hearings that were held in the last parliament, it's quite clear that a lot of work still needs to be done. For instance, Project 141 has not yet been completed by the South African Law Reform Commission to consult with both the Department of Health, Department of Justice, and National Treasury. So a lot of work has not yet been completed, but I would give the Department of Justice no more than 10 minutes just to take us through, and that we need to allow that process to be completed. And because part of the paper that according to Project 141 is supposed to be done to deal with the issue of these payments is supposed to be submitted to by the South African Law Reform Commission by the middle of this year. So they have not yet completed that particular process, which means that it is a half-baked kind of a process that is before us. Can I allow Mr. Dupree? And I was told that somebody from the Department of Health would be present today. Can I have an indication if that person is present? No indication, Mr. Dupree?
Honorable Chair. Advocate Lufuno Makoshi from Health and Advocate Mwavelo from Health. We are here.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much for availing yourselves.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Dupree, and then we'll also give Health an opportunity. Hello?
Yes, maybe before they start, we have an apology from the Minister and the Deputy.
Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
We have an apology from the Minister and the Deputy.
Yes, okay. Mr. Dupree?
Morning, Mr. Chair, and good morning to the members of the Portfolio Committee. My colleagues also joining me today is our Acting Deputy Director General, Mr. Nelson Matibe, and then also Dr. Ina Buerta. Our Acting Director General requested us to apologize to you that you won't be able, or is trying to connect, but I know for a fact, Mr. Chair, that one can always blame outdoor sports for not performing on the weather, but this time the weather is impeding on us, Chair. So I would request your indulgence. Mr. Chair, I'm going to fall in with our presentation on the bill.
You can proceed, Mr. Dupree.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, you are correct. There is a South African... Yes, Chair. There's a South African Law Reform Commission research project on its way. However, in the issue paper, they have already indicated or recommended that the bill could be promoted as an interim measure, because what they have identified, Mr. Chair, is that an amendment could be affected to the once and for all rule. It's a common law rule, and the rule provides that if a plaintiff suffers damages, then that plaintiff can only claim once, and that would include past and future damages. And then if the court awards in favor of that plaintiff, then a lump sum is paid out. The lump sum then, of course, covers past, present, and future damages. Now, the South African Law Reform Commission recommended that one could possibly consider amending the State Liability Amendment Act to provide for structured payments. And that would mean that in the case of claim being instituted in respect of medical negligence, that a structure, that the court may order a structured payment. That would mean that the court could order that the past and present damages could be paid out immediately to the victim or the person suffering the damages, and that the future expenses could then be ordered in terms of structured payment. Now, if we look at the bill itself, Mr. Chair, indeed, the bill was introduced in 2018. The department was able to brief the Portfolio Committee on the content of the bill. The Portfolio Committee also held public hearings, and that was where the matter ended. Now, turning to the amendment bill itself, as I indicated, the amendment bill is promoted in the interim pending the outcome of the larger investigation of the South African Law Reform Commission into medico-legal claims. That does not mean that the bill cannot be proceeded with pending the outcome of that investigation. The bill can be proceeded with indeed as a separate initiative in order to attempt to address certain concerns with regard to lump sum payments. Now, Mr. Chair, if we look at the bill itself, Clause 1 aims to introduce a new Section 2 capital A, in terms of which a court in a successful claim against the state that exceeds 1 million rand must order that compensation be paid in terms of a structured settlement which may provide for past expenses and damages, necessary immediate expenses, and then periodic payments in respect of future costs. The proposed new section also provides that insofar as the cost of future care and future medical treatment and future loss of earnings are concerned, the court must order that the compensation cost might be paid in periodic payments of at least once per year. The proposed new subsections 2, B and C make provision for those instances where the state can be ordered to provide the treatment to the injured parties. The amount payable by way of periodic payments will increase annually in accordance with the Consumer Price Index. And then also provision is made for any party to apply to the court for a variation of the periodic payment if a substantial change in the conditional circumstances of the injured party necessitates such a variation. Since the proposed new section capital 2A will exclude medico-legal claims insofar as future medical expenses are concerned, from the once and for all rule, there is also a need to amend Section 4 of the Principal Act, and that's the savings provision. That amendment is merely of a consequential amendment to clarify that proceedings resulting from the wrongful medical treatment, which have not been instituted or concluded prior to the commencement of Section 2A, must be instituted, continued and concluded in accordance with the new Section 2A. Mr. Chair, that is briefly then the overview of what the bill entails. We have also provided in our summary from slides 10 to 14 an overview of the comments that we have received. There were a number of interested parties that were in favor of the bill. However, and I would tend to say that, if I remember correctly, the majority of the interested parties were not in favor of the bill and objected to a number of clauses. Although they objected, they also made positive contributions with regard to the improvement of certain of the clauses which we have noted, and that will factor into the second draft of the bill. They have also highlighted a number of implementation challenges, and that is more the sphere of activities of the Department of Health. That is, among others, the reason why we have colleagues from the Department of Health present today to assist more with regard to questions that relate to the practical implementation challenges that the National Department of Health then face. And I think the remaining two slides are actually self-explanatory, Mr. Chair, and I think I've got 1.5 minutes left. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dupuis, for your input and for sticking to time. Thank you very much, Department of Health.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. As a department, we also support the bill because it assists us in dealing with the contingent liability that has risen substantially since the amendment of the RAF legislation. So we are in support of the bill. However, our issue is that, and in terms of what the provincial departments of health who are implementing these have an approach of having to render the services or the future medical expenses in hospitals, so that at least instead of us maybe paying lump sum amounts, then for all the future medical expenses that will be catered at public health establishments, and where such health establishments are unable to do that, at least that has to be done at a private health facility, but at the state cost, so that at least it cuts the contingent liability that the state is subjected to. So those are some of the issues that we, from a provincial department of health, they have indicated that these are the issues that we need to focus on. Almost 80% of the claims is for future medical expenses. And in some of the studies that have been made, most of these people end up maybe deceased before they maybe a period of 5 years. And the whole amount, perhaps of 20 million, go to the deceased estate. And that was meant for future medical expenses. So therefore, to deal with the issue that the department has, the bill at least provides or empower the courts to order that future medical expenses be rendered at a public facility. So we are in support of the bill with the development of the common law rule that was also raised at the Constitutional Court in the Zudu judgment, where the Constitutional Court indicated that if the state can prove that it has the capacity to provide the services, there is no need why such services cannot be provided instead of the lump sum money. And that was also applied by Judge Gately, in where she has ordered that at least a plaintiff has to be provided future medical expense treatment at Charlotte Maxeke Hospital. But it is critical that at least that common law be developed through the legislature. And hence, we support that the State Liability Amendment Bill be amended to make sure that at least where it is possible to provide those treatment, the state must therefore be able to do that. Where it is fail or doesn't have the resources, it has to be done at a private facility, but at the state cost. So those are our inputs, Honorable Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nivot Dracha. Honorable Stephen Swart. Let's start with Honorable Werner Horn. Let's start with Honorable Nivo Drachen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentations. I'm trying to understand this bill. I do have two questions, and both presenters, the first presenter, Mr. Dupria, you said that previously with the public hearings, there were some objections. Can you give us an example of the kind of objections? So I want to understand what the objections were previously. And then the second presenter, Department of Health, I'm very concerned, and I want to know how the department deals with negligence caused as a result of this, but also negligence caused with regards to the heavy burden on families, because it results, most of the time negligence results in disability, which is a heavy burden to our people, especially with regard to either disabled children or people where the family now have additional expenses. And I don't want this bill to be a burden for families who need to cover medical expenses and devices for their family members where negligence happened. So what does the Department of Health do where doctors are negligent to protect the family, first of all? And then I want to know, the amendments in this bill, doesn't it cause a financial burden to the families where I have to see to something that is not there, was not there before? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Newvote, Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chair. I think what the Honourable Nivo Drachen asked is very relevant questions which we will have to grapple with. For now, want to limit myself to just asking the question, why, given the fact that this was envisaged, then shelved, is it brought back now in the face of the pending big investigation being finalized? One of the big issues we face, Chair, as this committee, is that and one of the limitations we've identified ourselves is the fact that we get bogged down with what one can call stopgap legislative amendments all the time. This bill has been tabled, and we're obviously bound to process it, but it remains a bit of a concern that this is once again, for all intents and purposes, and as the department say, an interim measure. And I want to ask the question, why is this interim measure of such an importance now if the whole system on the department's version is going to be overhauled very soon? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm covered.
Thank you very much. Oh, Honorable Swart, and then followed
Thank
by...
Thank you, Chair. Some members of this committee were part of the previous committee where very strong objections were raised against this bill by a number in the medical fraternity. Those submissions are available to each one of us. Let us bear in mind, Chair, that we are dealing with gender-based violence. And one of the scourges of, one of the parts of that is women in childbirth. South Africa's got a very high rate of maternal mortality, and that is preventable. And Chair, what we are considering here is changing the common law right of women that have difficulties with childbirth resulting in obstetric and as a result of obstetric negligence being able to claim. This has significant impacts. And Chair, I would support your view considering the issues that the Law Reform Commission is looking at this, that we need to be very cautious in how we deal with this matter at this stage. This is a very, very complex issue that is going to the heart. As the Minister of Justice said, this bill will change the whole common law right of poor people to claim for compensation for negligence. And we know, Chair, that more than 20, there's a study, 29,000 women have died giving birth in public health facilities from 1990 to 2014. Now the majority, and we're also looking at a lot of the children that are born with cerebral palsy, that are entitled to compensation. Now, part of this act is that those people that have suffered medical negligence at public health facilities, of which only 5 out of 649 adhere to the standards, must go back to those public health authorities. So, Chair, I think there are also significant implications for the budget of the nation. The Public Finance Management Act does not make provision for staggered payments over many, many years. There's a whole issue around that. The Finance Committee budgets for a 3 to 5 year period, not for 20, 30 years. And in effect, this is kicking the can down the road. The actuaries in the previous parliament said it will cost more for the state in the long run. It's going to cost more. This is information that we've got, Chair. So I appreciate the dilemma, but the heart of this is set out in the slides that we've got there, slide 9, that indicates the comments, the expert review. The majority of the deaths and the medical negligence are preventable, and as a result of the poor quality of care during different stages, the poor quality of care in our public health facilities. That is the essence of the problem. So, Chair, I don't have questions at this stage. I think this is, we've got very, very urgent issues to deal with, gender-based violence, but this is part of that. And I do think that we need to consider the whole approach by the Law Reform Commission. They will be coming up with a full recommendation. This is a very complex issue with medical negligence at the heart of it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Iago.
Thank you so much, Chair. I think Honorable Swart has really covered most of what was dear and close to me. Because now, for instance, last year, the EFF dealt a lot with women who were coming forward with forced sterilizations. So basically, their wombs are being removed without their permission because some had tested positive for HIV. Some were decided that they had too many kids, so their wombs were just removed. So this bill speaks highly to that kind of negligence, which is really life-changing and debilitating. Secondly, I want to know how the bill deals with hospitals that are notorious for blatant negligent cases, especially when it comes to childbearing, like he said, Honorable Swart, in terms of cerebral palsy, where a child is born, normally born in a natural way, but because of negligence at the hospitals, because they're not prepared, then the child comes out with cerebral palsy. So I want to know how prostitution and the law intends to directly and decisively deal with hospitals who really are not coming forward to the state to say, look, we have a problem of capacity, we have a problem of dealing with issues, hence we have this happening, but continue to operate as if everything is okay, yet we have got many, many children who die because of blatant negligence. We've got many women who are scarred because of negligence. So I would just like to know how this bill deals exactly with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Iago. Over to you, Mr. Dupris and the Department of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think the first question was largely covered by, and also once again, an overhead summary of the objections that were raised previously with regard to the bill by Mr. Swart. So I'm not going to regurgitate that. I think we've at least got on a high level on our presentation, the last few slides, we've got the main themes of the comments that we received. Once again, as in many other bills, some of them very repetitive, but also very relevant. The question regarding why the bill should be proceeded with pending the South African, or the outcome of the South African Law Reforms Commission's investigation, Chair, that is to a certain extent a difficult question to answer, but maybe to give you some solace is that Saturday, once again, I contacted the researcher at the South African Law Reform Commission, and that was exactly the point that we discussed at length. And as she, as a very experienced researcher, foresee the process running forward from the South African Law Reform Commission side, and we agreed and we came to the conclusion that we can, or the Portfolio Committee can proceed with this bill because of the fact that we are changing the law insofar as the common law is concerned. But I would like to indicate to the committee that we must understand what the State Liability Act is all about. That act merely provides the procedures and the guidelines in terms of which a claim can be instituted against the national or provincial government. And then it also provides guidelines with regard to how payments should be made to successful claimants. What I would like to indicate, Mr. Chair, in response to the concern that the rights of injured parties are taken away, that is, in my view, not the case. If you are entitled to 5 million now, you will be entitled to 5 million after the implementation of the Amendment Act. The change in the system or the approach that will be followed is that you will be immediately compensated in a lump sum for your past and present expenses, damages, and then also, for example, assisted aids that you need, like wheelchairs, etc. And then when it comes to the determination of the future loss damages, the court will still determine what that quantum will be. However, the court will then determine that it must be paid periodically to the injured party at least once a year. The last question that was raised, and I'm going to give my colleagues from Health the opportunity to respond to all the questions, but with your permission, Mr. Chair, I think the last question regarding how the bill deals with terrible hospitals, I think my colleagues from Health would also be able to assist. However, as I explained, the State Liability Act provides the guidelines on how claims should be instituted against the state and how those claims should be compensated. So strictly speaking, this bill does not address the issue of hospitals that are not up to scratch. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to hand over to my colleague from Health with your permission, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members for the questions raised. Maybe let me first indicate that in terms of the claims, there are two parts to the claims. That one that deals with general damages, that deals with pain and suffering and all other heads of damages. And then there is the damages for future medical expenses for the patient. Anytime when the person is requiring treatment, therefore that money would then have to be used for such. So that will still have the families having the general damages, because the question was that if we, it seems as if we are taking away the right of the poor family to have compensation. They will still have their compensation. Let's say if it was a 10 million claim, which has got maybe 3 million for general damages, that will still have to be paid as it is. But let's then look at what is meant for this money that is called future medical treatment or future medical expenses. This is the money that when, as and when the patient needs treatment, must therefore be treated. And what we have been saying is that because of the fact that in some instances these people don't maybe live long, then the estate then falls back into the family. But the fact of the matter is that we need to then see that those people are treated and properly treated, either at state or at private facility where the state will still have to pay for such. Then there was an issue relating to, say, there are lots of hospitals that are not doing well or they are known to be negligent. In 2015, the Minister of Health held a summit to deal with these issues, and part of the things were to deal with three issues, which the most critical part is patient safety. So that at least the state is not trying to absolve itself from the responsibility of rendering quality services. So therefore, that summit had a declaration that has got three areas. One of them is issues of safety, patient safety. And in one of the recommendations, was that there has to be good management which will ensure that there is ongoing treatment to improve capacity and skills and to ensure that the environment within which patients and both workers is safe, and to ensure that human resource management ensures appropriate staff numbers and staff with appropriate competency and knowledge. So these are some of the things that the department has been doing to make sure that public health services still render quality services, and to ensure that at least there are whatever information that is required. So the department, through the National Declaration on the Medical Legal Summit, provides for quite a range of issues that the provincial hospitals should therefore be able to deal with in order to address issues of poor services. Because we acknowledge as a department today that there are certain instances where these incidences will have been preventable. And as such, there have to be systems that will ensure that those services, those conduct, if it is on the basis of the staff, there is consequence management for those staff, so that at least the same mistake should not be repeated, and to make sure that people have got their meetings wherein they will share their experiences so that they can then improve the quality of services. So therefore, that is what the department is doing to ensure that, as a primary goal, we need to ensure that there is patient safety in our health facilities. And that is what we are gearing towards achieving through this declaration. And also the part of the bill that we're dealing with was as a result of that medical legal summit that says that the South African Law Reform Commission must therefore embark on a holistic approach to see what is the best way of dealing with this while still managing to ensure that people get compensation which is fair and equitable, is to also make sure that at least the health system is also stronger in terms of dealing with those. So those are the responses that we would like to provide to the portfolio committee.
Thank you very much, Advocate Mahoshe. I like your
your last statement, I think your two previous paragraphs of your last statements, that the South African Law Reform Commission needs to deal holistically with this matter. As the committee, we don't attach much significance to summits and declarations. We attach significance to impact on the ground. That is the first thing. We don't understand why still you want to bring something that is still being holistically investigated to the committee. What is the agency of wanting to deal with this matter in a piecemeal way whilst you can have a holistic and an impactful solution that can meaningfully change the lives of the people for the better? As such, I'm suggesting to the committee that this bill be referred back to the executive. Proper consultations are done, not only with the Department of Health and Justice, but also with National Treasury, the South African Law Reform Commission. Before you introduce the bill, you first bring before us a proper implementation plan. Not report of summits or conferences, a detailed implementation plan as that also responds to the objections that were raised. How significantly or in a meaningful way are you going to be responding to some of those objections so that you can get comfort that whatever we legislate as Parliament, one, we are convinced that it is for the benefit of our people, two, that we have enough information at our disposal, we can't be processing legislation whilst there is pending information that is not at our disposal. That is an irresponsible way of dealing with governance. It can't be promoted. The executive, when it approaches Parliament, it must approach Parliament on the basis of a complete and a proper application of mind as to what the problem is, what is the response to this, to that problem, what is the solution as a direct response to that problem, not stopgap measures. So go and do your groundwork properly. Once you have done your groundwork properly, then you can bring something that you can properly engage with. Our main issue as Parliament is not just to pass bills for the sake of passing bills. We see bills passed by Parliament as an instrument or instruments that are going to change meaningfully the lives of our people for the better, not as tick box exercises. So we cannot process a bill that has not been fully processed with all the available information before the people who are going to be decision makers. Honorable members, that is the summary from the chair. Any objection?
We agree, chair.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That brings us to the end of the meeting. So our next meeting will be on the 5th, but we will be working as the committee secretariat to take into consideration the issue that were raised in the meeting, to rework the program and try and bring some of the issues from correctional services on board. But those are subject to approval by the House Chair, because the directive from the House Chair is quite clear that committees that would be allowed to sit are those that are dealing with urgent legislation. So once we have reworked the program, we will have to submit it to the House Chair for his consideration. And then we would ensure that by the 5th of February, we bring a revised program to the committee for consideration. Is that agreeable, members?
Agreed.
Agreed.
Thank you very much.
Agreed, sir.
Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.